You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, December 12th, 2017.
And as of January 1st, 2019, Indian Creek will be part of Perry Clear Creek Fire District.
A proposed merger between Perry Creek Clear Creek and Indian Creek Fire Departments will go before the Monroe County Commissioners next week. WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with Indiana Creek Township Trustee Vicki Sorensen about the proposed merger, which could increase taxes for the area residents by as much as 8%.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Julie Ramey with the City of Bloomington's Park and Recreation Department discusses upcoming winter events for all ages. Reminders that winter is a good time to stay active on today's Everyday People, a weekly segment aimed at improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana University graduate students occupied Congressman Trey Hollingsworth's office for 8 hours yesterday. The student action demanded the Indiana 9th District Congressman change his vote, the U.S. tax plan being debated in December in D.C. Hollingsworth voted in favor of the House Republican bill, which student advocates say would levy taxes against their tuition reimbursement from institutions of higher education. Catherine Lehman of Campus Action for Democracy was among the protesters who delivered a petition to Hollingsworth's Greenwood office yesterday. Lehman says the protesters wanted to stay in the representative's office until he spoke with them about their concerns.
There we got into the office and the staff told us they'd get in touch with Trey. We were in the office for a total of about 8 hours. We never spoke to the representative. A number of us called his Washington, D.C. office while we were in the office. We kind of tried all kinds of, I guess you could say, desperate measures to try to get in touch with the guy, and we just couldn't do it.
Lehman says the Greenwood police were called in by Hollingsworth's staff in coordination with the Greenwood office's building owner, who would not identify himself to students.
So we went basically around 6:30 p.m., the police, the local, the Greenwood police got involved. And we said to them, you know, we're willing to stay here as long as it takes. And if you have to arrest us to get us out of here, then I guess that's what it takes. And it was sort of a strange thing. The police clearly did not want to arrest us inside of the congressman's office. And we wound up in this kind of strange limbo where we were essentially denied access to a bathroom by kind of a combination, I guess, of the landlord, Representative Hollingsworth, and the police. It was not really clear to us who was in charge of kind of what space. Seven of us basically spent 4 hours in this office between 6:30 and 10:30 p.m. being denied bathroom access or food or communication with the outside world.
Tracy Hutchings Getz was another of the student protesters who were reportedly locked inside the office. She says two of the congressman's staffers, one of them pregnant, were instructed to stay with the students for the duration of the occupation.
So two of his staff members, Hannah and Anya, were also there. And, you know, again, to me, you know, this really drives home Representative Hollingsworth's cowardness because he was unwilling to speak with us directly. Instead, it was we were told over and over again that we were being unduly cruel to his staff. He had one of the staff members was pregnant, and we were told that we were forcing her to stay in the office when, in fact, you know, she was employed by Representative Hollingsworth and you know, free to leave it at any moment. So they were in the office with us, and then eventually, right before we were forced out, they were relieved by a Marion County sheriff officer who was there to protect the personal information of, or what they said, the personal information of constituents in the office.
The students eventually left Representative Hollingsworth's office. The congressional tax bill is currently in remediation with its Senate counterpoint.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill issued a motion to intervene in a federal immigration case in Indianapolis. Late last week, Hill filed a motion to intervene in the federal case Antonio Lopez Aguilar versus Marion County Sheriff's Department. The case is brought against the Marion County Sheriff's Department and the state of Indiana by the Indiana chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. Lopez Aguilar was detained by the Marion County Sheriff's Department in 2014 while appearing in court on charges of driving without a license. The Sheriff's Department reportedly was working under an unofficial request from the Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. According to a press release, Hill's motion to intervene was filed, quote, in order to defend Indiana's law prohibiting local governments from establishing policies against cooperating with federal authorities in the enforcement of immigration laws, unquote. On November 7th, a federal judge ruled that both parties had agreed that the defendant, the Marion County Sheriff's Department, would not cooperate with ICE detention requests. Because both the defendant and plaintiff supported the consent decree, the attorney general said, quote, no one in the case represented Indiana's legitimate interest in upholding state law, unquote. Such a decree, Attorney General Hill stated, runs counter to Indiana law and public safety.
The Bloomington Plan Commission voiced its support last night for temporary changes to the city's Unified Development Ordinance that would limit downtown development. Proposed amendments would change parameters for what's termed as by-right developments. By-right projects are those that adhere to current zoning code and therefore don't require plan commission review. According to commission meeting documents, the proposed changes are based on a community-wide belief that the existing comprehensive plan and unified development ordinance don't do enough to preserve the integrity, uniqueness, and diversity of downtown neighborhoods. Planning Director Terry Porter said the changes are not intended to be permanent, but only to cover the time it takes the city to finish updating its comprehensive plan and the Unified Development Ordinance.
The development review process has not changed. The change is that projects that may have been able to be built by right will be required to come through the Planning and Transportation Department and the Plan Commission for further discussion. As it stands, it's possible to build a four-story building by right.
Development Services Manager James Roach spoke to the amendment's specific changes in height, density, and massing of downtown developments. According to Roach, the maximum height of new projects is to be reduced by 10 feet. The maximum density will be halved.
The downtown core overlay currently is at 60 units per acre, and that would be cut in half to 30 units an acre.
The exception is the downtown tech park. Its maximum density will remain at 15 units per acre. Roach also described a change to be allowed mass of buildings.
A phenomenon we've seen is designers, architects looking at, they create a module of the maximum width permitted, and then create a very narrow zone for balconies that's only 8-10 feet wide, and then bump the building back out to the same depth from the previous module. So this change would create a minimum module width. So for example, in the downtown core overlay, you could have a section of a building built right at the street line of 65 feet, and then have to break it up into another module, push it back away from the street a little bit to give some ins and outs of the building. But that new section has to be at least 25 feet wide. Currently, we have the maximum. Our proposal is also to add in a minimum. And it varies by overlay. It's either 20 or 25 feet to give a real good, solid break in buildings.
Planning Director Terry Porter says the amendment also encourages the Plan Commission to weigh additional considerations when deciding whether to approve projects that don't meet existing standards.
The Plan Commission is encouraged to consider projects that include a high degree of best practice, sustainable development design features, that are unique designs which are not incompatible with their surroundings, and that contribute to the diversification of downtown housing and or contribute to addressing the community's affordable housing challenge.
Commission member Isabel Piedmont Smith notes the changes shouldn't be a shock to the business community and cites feedback citizens give her.
The buildings downtown are too tall, they're too monolithic, they're too student-centric. Downtown is just a student neighborhood and people aren't interested and don't feel like they are included and so aren't interested in coming downtown as much because of that. So really I'm reacting to what I've been hearing for years.
Commission member Heather Maritano said constituents tell her they want a quality of development that isn't being produced.
First of all, it's going to slow development. Even if every single project that's in the pipeline continues to go forward, they're going to move forward more slowly. I mean, just by the very nature of it, right? The staff is already going to be overwhelmed. Things are just going to take longer. And what that means is that we're going to lose ground in our fight to keep up with demand.
And Commission member Brad Weisler was the only member to vote against the ordinance changes, which he says will actually work against creating affordable housing.
First of all, it's going to slow development. Even if every single project that's in the pipeline continues to go forward, they're going to move forward more slowly. I mean, just by the very nature of it, right? The staff is already going to be overwhelmed. Things are just going to take longer. And what that means is that we're going to lose ground in our fight to keep up with demand.
Weisler says the extended process will add costs to new projects, which will get passed on to customers. And he projects that new development will move outside the city limits. Board of Realtors President Jeff Golden complained that the public was not given enough time to review or comment on the proposed ordinance change. Golden also said the amendment language is too vague and complained about having to consult with planning department on projects.
How much would a developer be forced to spend on site plans, architectural renderings, and infrastructure plans in order for the planning department to be able to determine if it would meet a high degree of best practice? A developer weighs the risk of investment with the hope that a profitable project will result. How could a developer weigh the risk or cost of numerous design changes on a property that they may or may not yet control with no idea what the standard is?
Attorney Mike Carman also spoke against the changes, saying the result will be a multitude of one-story buildings. As for creating affordable housing downtown, Carman says it's a community issue that a select few are being asked to bear responsibility for.
Mr. Lewis through Cedar View Development, Mary Friedman through Omega Properties, the Hoffmans through HMAC, you're asking a few people, a handful of people, to pay all the price to solve what you call a housing crisis problem. And to me, that's just wrong. If it's a community problem, it ought to be a community bill payer. And what we're doing is we're doing it on the backs of a handful of people who have the audacity to build mixed-use buildings downtown. And I would hope that that's going to change, and it needs to change soon. It just does not seem right.
In an email to the planning department, local realtor Ryan Shady says officials are setting regressive policies in reaction to, quote, a vocal minority of people who don't want the city to grow. Shady further states that by passing the amendment, the city will be shooting itself in the foot with, quote, a millennial generation who want to live and work in an urban, dense environment. In the same meeting, the Plan Commission approved a downtown mixed-use development by Omega Properties that includes 4 units of affordable housing and $25,000 contribution to the city's Affordable Housing Fund. Speaking on behalf of the developer, architect Mike Cornett said Omega Properties is demonstrating its commitment to the direction the city is taking downtown.
So we've heard loud and clear what the current administration and the future of downtown planning and architecture hold for us. And we're you know, very interested in moving that discussion forward.
The Bloomington City Council is scheduled to hear the proposed ordinance changes in its work session tomorrow night. It will take a final vote in a later session. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from the Uptown Cafe, established in 1976, located at 102 East Kirkwood Avenue, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner, as well as wine, beer, spirits, and cocktails. More information is available online at the-uptowncafe.com.
The Perry Clear Creek Fire Department will propose a merger with the Indian Creek Fire Department before the Monroe County Commissioners next Wednesday. WFHB News Director Wes Martin spoke with Indian Creek Township Trustee Vicki Sorensen, who is behind the proposed merger. In today's feature report, Sorensen says that while this merger would raise taxes on residents of Indian Creek south of Bloomington, it's necessary to maintain fire coverage as the township fire departments haven't received funding from the county's public safety tax.
Back in 2016, in March, the township board of Indian Creek, we came together and decided that we needed to look for other ways of being able to generate more money for the fire department. With small fire departments, it's sometimes hard to maintain, especially when you're only given a small amount from the state. And so our first thing was to go and be in the talks for the fire territory that was starting to be formed by Benton and Bloomington and Washington Township. And Van Buren and I, we were in part of those meetings. And then once Van Buren decided this was not for them at this time, and they pulled out, then we had to pull out because you have to touch a township. So then we decided that the next thing was to go and see if Perry Clear Creek Fire District would allow us to pursue joining them. So I went before the Fire District Board in March and asked if we could pursue, and they gave us, sure. It's all been kind of a new process for all of us. And so then what I did, I consulted UMBA, which is a consulting firm in the state of Indiana for fire districts and fire territories, to give us guidance on what our first steps needed to be, which was to send out letters to the landowners in Indian Creek Township to see what the response we would get from them on trying to pursue to join the fire district. So we did that, and I think it was in July of 2016, and we got a very positive response from the letters that we sent out. So then the next step was to send out letters to Perry Township and Clear Creek Township asking them if we could pursue joining the fire district. And so that started in January of this year, sending those letters out. And so we finally, in I think it was October, were able to get what we needed, according to the state code of 20% of the landowners saying yes, or a minimum, with a minimum of 500 names that signed our petition. So then I took everything to the auditor's office, who had to verify every letter and scan the letters for public information. And now we're going before the county commissioners, who are the ones that will say yes or no that we can join. And if they say, yes, we can join, which we're holding a meeting December the 20th at 10 a.m. with the county commissioners, then as of January the 1st, 2019, Indian Creek will be part of the Perry Clear Creek Fire District.
And what exactly set all of this in motion? What was the impetus behind Perry Clear Creek joining up with Indian Creek?
For us, for Indian Creek, it was that trying to maintain a fire station, fire equipment, all the regulations of testing of equipment, furnishing fire gear for firefighters, it's expensive. And most of our equipment is very old, and it's kind of like you just pray that nothing breaks because it will take money to repair something. And so, and again, I contract with Indian Creek Firefighters, Inc. And so I went before their fire board and said I was wanting to pursue this of us joining the fire district. And there was a little resistance at first, which was understandable. They've been the fire department in the township for many, many years. And but then as we talked and everybody came together, the fire board, the township board, and when we had public meetings, and then it was decided that we needed to find a better way of being able to maintain a fire station in the township. And so that's why we went to Perry Clear Creek to see if they would allow us to join them.
It's my understanding that kind of the impetus for all of this has been the public safety tax not allocating additional funds to township fire departments. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That might be part of it, but I had already started looking to join the fire district before we even were told about this public safety tax money in 2016. And so then, because I was still needing to have revenue for a fire station, I went before the tax committee and asked for money to be able to hire another part-time person at the fire station. We'd already had one part-time person, and we would like a second person so that we had somebody on duty from 7 in the morning until 5 in the evening, 5 days a week. And then the volunteers are on call in the evenings and on weekends. And so the public safety money I was awarded that was given to us this year, 2017, was a big help because we were able to purchase radios and we were able to hire that second part-time person. When I went before them again this year for 2018 money, all the townships were denied and the money was given to the central dispatch. And I went before them and everybody knew that I was pursuing joining the Perry Clear Creek Fire District, but I also, in the meantime, have to maintain fire protection and emergency medical services for the residents of Indian Creek for 2018. So that's why I went before them. So I don't believe it was really because of the public safety money. That was just an added bonus for us for 2017, and we were hoping for 2018, but we were like all the other townships. We were awarded nothing.
And would this joining of both fire townships, would that increase taxes in either Perry Clear Creek or Indian Creek?
Well, Indian Creek, and we had a public meeting December the 5th with Umbaugh presenting to the public the increase. Because Indian Creek, we were only paying, I think it was like 6 cents per $100 of assessed value. We needed to come up to what Perry and Clear Creek are paying, which is 16 cents per $100 of assessed value. And so was presented to the people that did come to the public meeting. There were no protests against it, and it would be an average of about $30 extra on your yearly taxes.
Is that generally about 7 to 8% increase?
Yes, for Indian Creek.
But Perry
and Clear Creek stay the same.
Okay.
There was no increase for them.
What case will you be presenting to Monroe County Commissioners on their meeting on the 20th?
Well, the auditor's office has submitted to them a letter this week stating that we had met the guidelines and that we were qualified to pursue joining the fire district, and now it's up to the county commissioners to say yes or no. And then we'll go from there. If they say no, then we just go back to the drawing board on how we survive. Hopefully they will say yes. And if they do, then we start the process next year of Indian Creek Firefighters, Inc. will have to dissolve themselves and then we'll have to transfer equipment, different things that will be the next challenge in this process.
That was WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with Indian Creek Township Trustee Vicki Sorensen about the proposed merger of Perry Creek and Indian Creek Fire Departments.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Don't mess around.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday resources for everyday people. Connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Hi, today we have Julie Ramey with Parks and Recreation. Welcome back.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure.
Welcome, Julie.
Winter does not have to be a time where you lay on the couch and hide from outside or just lay there until spring comes. Wintertime is a great time to be involved with Parks and Recreation. Well, staying active is so important, right? Even when it's cold outside. So
probably more so.
Even more, yeah, because you don't want to get all stiff and, like I said, waiting for spring. So the Twin Lakes Recreation Center has pickleball Mondays,
ooh,
Wednesdays,
cool,
and Fridays. If you've never played pickleball, you are really missing out. It is a cross between ping pong and tennis.
Awesome.
So you play on a court that's about half the size of a tennis court. And you have what looks like, you use what looks like a ping pong paddle,
okay,
and what looks like a wiffle softball.
Okay.
So it's not a heavy ball. It's not a long way to run, but you can either be super uber competitive or just bat the ball around for fun. And it's open play Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 9 a.m. until 1 p.m.
Wow.
And you can either pay a daily admission to the Twin Lakes Recreation Center, or you can get a month-long, six-month-long, year-long membership and play anytime you want. You can also call the Twin Lakes Recreation Center at 812-349-3720.
Perfect. Anything else going on that we need to let listeners know about?
Well, it's a great time of year to go ice skating as well.
Yes.
The Frank Southern Ice Arena is open for business, and it is open for public skating daily. So general admission public skating occurs between noon and 2:30 every day of the week, Monday through Friday. So take a lunch break when the kids are out of school. Take them to the ice arena.
That's a really good idea.
It's a great idea. Let them skate around in circles and flop around on the ice. It's lots of fun, and it's a good way to get some exercise. Exercise a new set of muscles if you don't skate all the time. And it's really no more difficult than roller skating, and I can say this because I don't skate, but I go a few times a year just to ice skate because that's something that you do in the wintertime.
And I think even if you're not able to actually ice skate, you can hang out by the fireplace.
They do have a lovely fireplace.
And have some hot chocolate and maybe watch your friends do some activities on the ice.
There's hockey. The IU hockey, men's hockey team plays at the Frank Southern Ice Arena. The Bloomington Blades, which is our travel hockey team. There's a youth and high school Blades teams. And our house hockey program all practice at the ice arena. The Bloomington Figure Skating Club practices at the Frank Southern Ice Arena. There is a fantastic figure skating club. And they're very active in the community and are big supporters of our Skate with Santa event that is also coming up on December 15th. So from 1:30 until 3 p.m., Skate with Santa. Santa will be there along with Mrs. Claus and all the elves out on the ice at the ice arena. So it's another chance to get out on the ice.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Julie.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People.
Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our engineer is Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Our executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Aaron Wagermiller.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizens journalists, email news at WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.